Valley Talk on News Talk 1580 KGAL.
Welcome to Valley Talk. I'm Jeff McMahon.
And I'm Hossel Herring.
Today on Valley Talk, Hossel joins us, as he does every Tuesday, lifetime newspaper guy. He's from kind of the old school of reporting, and as you'll hear today, is wondering what kind of standards or lack of them is going on with the media today. That's going to be part of what he talks about. But Hossel was a longtime editor of the Albany Democrat Herald. Loved reading his editorials through the years and missed seeing those. But you can still see Hossel's writing on his own website, hh-today.com. He's very active, posts pretty much every day a new article, maybe not every single day, but often it's every day, and gives you the chance to comment and discuss what he's written about with your fellow readers at his website, hh-today.com. Encourage you to check it out. Valley Talk today is brought to you by locally owned and operated J&J Electric in Albany. They've been just that, locally owned and operated, for over 50 years. Same location the whole time, 22nd and South Pacific in Albany, J&J Electric. Great website. You can make your list there, right, visiting the website, j-jelectric.com. That's j-jelectric.com. And stop by anytime with questions. Ask for advice. They're happy to give it. It's what they've been doing for over 50 years. 22nd and South Pacific, J&J Electric in Albany, our sponsor for Valley Talk today. We're going to open up talking about the impeachment process going on in Washington, D.C., and as much as the process itself, the coverage of it by the media.
That's right, and that's what interested me. The context is, of course, that tomorrow the Congressional Committee is going to have public hearings on its inquiry on whether or not to pursue impeachment, and a whole bunch of people are going to testify. Usually, as I understand it, they're diplomats who worked for or still work for the State Department and so forth. And what struck me about it is the parallels that the media, the press mostly, that I, the Associated Press that I read, the news organization that is News Cooperative, the parallels that the AP was drawing between it and Watergate. The Watergate, of course, in 1973, is the scandal that forced President Nixon to resign, and the terminology that is being used in part in connection with this Trump controversy having to do with the Ukraine is very similar to what was used to describe the Watergate affair. We're talking about the Watergate, I mean the Ukraine scandal or the Trump crisis or something. And as far as I can tell, there aren't any parallels so far.
Not any true parallels.
Well, that I can see anyway.
Right.
In Watergate, we were talking about crimes that had been committed and that were being covered up.
Against the law acts that were performed by public officials.
Or sponsored by them.
Or sponsored by them.
A burglary,
right.
For
directed
example.
By them. Right. Exactly.
And then all kinds of other stuff that had to do with surveillance of private citizens and so forth. And in this case, what we have is the President of the United States dealing with a foreign country and wanting them to do certain things. What he wanted them to do, apparently, was to investigate whether or not the Ukraine had anything to do with the origin of the Russia collusion myth. And it seems to me that that's a perfectly legitimate interest of the president and, in fact, of the United States to try to get to the bottom of that. And at the time, the U.S. had offered the country of Ukraine some aid to strengthen its military against potential Russian aggression.
Yeah.
And the president is being accused of withholding that aid, or at least threatening to withhold the aid until Ukraine came through and committed itself to some kind of an investigation to check into this this allegation of whether that the Ukraine had something to do with the Russia collusion investigation. Well, even if that all of that is true, I figure, so what? It can't be wrong to ask somebody to look into something, because I mean he's not saying that look, you guys did something wrong and that's why I'm withholding the aid or something. No, I said he said as near as I can tell, the president said to Ukraine, to the president who was newly elected, hey, I want you to look into that because it's kind of interesting. We want to know if Ukraine had anything to do with this. And to ask for information seems to be perfectly legitimate.
Now, the Joe Biden's son angle on that.
Well, Joe Biden's son was employed by a Ukrainian company at a vastly inflated salary for, as far as anybody can tell, not doing anything.
Not doing really anything. Yeah.
And so that is an element of the thing. But whether or not that had anything to do with it would be up to the Ukraine to figure out.
Right.
And to ask the Ukraine, look, why don't you guys figure this out? I'd like to know. And if you can find something out, let me know. So what? I mean, that seems like that is perfectly legitimate.
It seems
thing
very,
to do.
Yeah, very appropriate, legitimate.
And you would think that the American government would do that sort of thing if it suspects that there's, or if it hears that there's something maybe wrong in connection with some other country, it would ask that country to look into it. I mean, what's wrong with that? And even if there was some kind of a so-called quid pro quo, it said, look, I want you to look into this. And remember, we're going to send you a bunch of aid. Now, we kind of expect some cooperation here. That kind of talk seems to me to be perfectly legitimate. It's within
absolutely.
It's within the purview of the of the national government of the United States to pursue its own interests. And
to offer aid or not offer aid to whoever they choose.
I would think. And to ask for the Ukraine for some information about the controversial subject that has come up. After all, remember that Democrats in Congress for two years were hammering away at the Russian collusion. They wanted to find out what the Russian collusion was all about. Turns out there was nothing there. But now it turns out that maybe somebody started this Russian collusion stuff, and maybe some of that had to do, and if some of that had to do with the Ukraine, it'd be worth finding out,
yes.
You would think that Democrats in Congress would be the first to want to find out about that.
What do you think about the possibility that there are those in the Democratic Party who were at the beginning of starting this whole thing?
Well,
that do not want to be found out, and that's a big motivation for what they're doing. I know it's speculation. I totally understand that. Does that even seem, let's put it this way, so you don't really have to speculate. You can just answer yes or no to this question, a much more broad question, and that would that even be possible be happening?
Anything is possible. In international relations and in American politics, anything is possible. I mean, you know, you do just a bunch of, I mean, people do underhanded stuff sometimes when they're in power and they want to stay in power.
No kidding.
Or they want to get the other guy out of power. They do stuff that, you know, normal people wouldn't normally do.
Yes.
And sure, you don't necessarily want them to do that, but I think that's the fact of life. You're right. Yeah. We don't want to speculate about what might be at the exactly at the bottom. But the point here is, rather than speculate, you want to find out. And to ask a foreign government to say, hey, look into this, and whatever you find out, let me know. I'd be interested. And then, or make it public, and then everybody knows. I mean, that would be, I think, the way to go in all these matters. And to complain about it, it seems really underhanded. It's two-faced is what it feels like.
Yes.
I mean, remember when Democrats took over Congress, that is, took over the Senate, took over the House. Right away, some of the more ardent Democrats said, "Look, now we're going to impeach Trump." So, I mean, they were looking for something, anything.
In fact, that seems as if they've been looking and scratching and clawing to find anything.
Well, they have. I mean, first with the Russian collusion thing, that didn't work out, so now they need something else. Some guy came to Schiff, the chairman of the House committee looking into this, and said, hey, Trump made a phone call. It was a little weird to me. I didn't like it. I didn't like the implications of that. And so Schiff, you know, eyes lit up, probably, most likely, speculating here. oh, wow, now let's pursue that. Maybe now we can get him. I mean, that's how this thing is coming about, it seems to me. And to draw a parallel between that and the crimes
that were committed in Watergate and the cover-up, that's not even close.
That doesn't seem at all right. And no. I think the only way that I don't know the people writing this stuff for the AP and other outlets, whether they're old enough to really remember Watergate or if they paid any attention to it or they studied up on it. If they did, they wouldn't make that kind of a comparison if they were honest about it. So,
if they were honest about it.
But you know, the whole idea of making this look like Watergate, we ought to be aware that that is not really justified.
Well, there's a story of more local interest that we're going to chat about now here on Valley Talk. Hossel Herring, our guest here, of course, his website, hh-today.com. The Corvallis School Board has had a change. And what's happened basically is Brandy Fortson, one of the school board members, has resigned her position or his position or their position. We'll talk about that with the board. Fortson has been under fire in the community for a Twitter post that declared that all cops are the B word. And I think it's probably a word we can say on the radio, so I'll go ahead and just say it. All cops are bastards is what she said on Twitter. And so the school board pretty much put her in a position where they were requiring her to resign recommending that she resign.
She has, in fact, offered to. I say this person has offered to resign, has resigned, and the school board apparently tonight is expected to accept that resignation and then start the process of filling the spot. None of that is all that interesting. What's interesting is that anybody on the school board would be willing to make such a stupid comment on Twitter, such a generalization that is completely unjustified.
Yes,
and then this person made a comment to the effect that this was misinterpreted because it was out of context or didn't give the context. Or the person didn't give the context in the Twitter comment, and the context had something to do with some police action that took place back east somewhere, maybe in Atlanta, if I remember right, or somewhere. Had no connection at all to anything having to do with the Corvallis school system or the school board or even this area or even the state or even this region of the country. So she made some completely stupid comment on Twitter. And the school board said, well, you know, that's not in line with the goals of the school board. And I'm thinking, so what? People can't say, I mean, they can't be stupid. What does it have to do with the goals of the school board? Seems like people ought to be free to say, to speak their mind, regardless of what the school board's goals are or what their guidelines are and so forth. The school board can say, yeah, we don't agree with that, fine, but there's no particular reason to encourage somebody, to resign, really. But the point here is this person by the name of, Brandy Fortson is resigning and so forth. What struck me about the story is that this school board member had campaigned, and she considers herself so-called a binary person.
Right.
And that means that you can't, and she doesn't want to be referred to by any of the standard pronouns that the English language has people.
Not she or he or him or her.
That's right. And so she campaigned, among other things, on the use of proper pronouns for people like her or for people like them. And that, struck me as the height of irony. Proper pronouns. Come on. When I was reading the stories about all this, and there was one on OPB this morning that said the following. Fortson, who identifies as non-binary, was elected to the seat this year Their bio says they are a social justice organizer who has worked in the mental health field. Their bio says they are. He says, what does that do to the English language? And why do news organizations like OPB or the papers, you know, why do they go along with this sort of thing? Now,
because that's unclear writing.
Previously, there was a story in the paper about all this that quoted another person saying that Fortson intended to resign. And it said, you know, this other person said they intend to resign. And I'm thinking, why? What is this other person? Is she on the school board too? Are they both going to resign or what?
So the only pronoun that would make sense to me, and like, apparently it's not acceptable by someone who's non-binary, apparently, but would be the word it. It would at least make sense. Now, if you say that same sentence and replace the word, put the word it in there.
Its bio says it is a social justice. No, right. Well, that doesn't make any sense either. You don't refer to people by it.
Well, you don't usually, but at least it's singular.
Well, it
as
is.
As opposed to a plural sort of connotation, and because that's what really makes it not make sense, is that we're talking about, is this...
That's right.
A group of people? What is it? What are they saying here? It doesn't make sense. So as far as the English language thing is concerned.
And what bothers me about it is that that news media are, you know, caving into this unusual choice of words that people insist on in some cases, purely for their own benefit or for their own, because that's what their own desire is. They want the English language to be twisted so that they don't get offended.
Maybe we can come up with a new pronoun, or those that are non-binary can try to come up with a new pronoun that would work. Could be an entirely new word, but at least we would know what that word was intended to mean. And so it would make a story like this make sense.
No, yeah, that's the trouble with this. I mean, you know, people have learned the language ever since they were little kids, and you can't just start picking different pronouns. You can go online and you can find some treatment of what pronouns are preferred or are being created by the in the interests of people who don't like the regular pronouns. And you read the list, Z and Zebs, Zeds, and so forth. I mean, none of those words make any sense.
Yeah.
And it's like you would think that... We want to treat everybody with the respect that a human being deserves.
Absolutely.
You don't want to make fun of anybody.
No.
And so forth.
Never.
And you don't want to certainly insult anybody, and you don't want to hurt them. But come on, can't we just decide that English is the language we communicate in, and so we ought to be clear. And we can't just start changing the language so as not to offend the sensibilities of a few people. That makes no sense to me. But because, you know, especially in the media, I mean, you're communicating to thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people, and you want them to understand what you're talking about. You don't want to confuse them. And so...
Well, maybe there is some kind of a compromise here, Hasso. As the fact is that the English language does evolve and change over time.
But not in such drastic ways and such unusual ways where you just invent a bunch of words and you expect people to start understanding them.
But couldn't there be a term that could be derived that would work or that would help?
Well,
possibly.
Good luck trying to find it.
Yeah.
But I'm just wishing that...
I understand your frustration, because I would read the same thing and it wouldn't make any sense to me. And I'd be going, what the heck is... I don't understand this, because it is so different and it doesn't make sense.
In conversational English, of course, we often use there as a pronoun that refers to a particular person, especially when we don't know if it's a man or if it's female or male.
Right.
And But to do it in such a way that you use the first person pronoun, and then add a verb in the plural for somebody who's actually a single individual, that's what's confusing. And when you do it in a sentence that has more than one person in it, you don't know who you're talking about. At least I don't know who they're talking about. And so that's, I think, we ought to quit doing.
Yeah, that's Hasso Herring. I'm Jeff McMahon. This has already been a lot of fun.
I hope you don't get a lot of repercussions from little discussion.
you're expressing a frustration with the language and how it's being used, and that's perfectly legitimate.
I just don't want it to be confusing, that's all.
Right. So, yeah. So, and I'm coming from a different angle. Maybe we can make it a little less confusing, possibly. And you were very clear in saying you don't want to offend or hurt anybody, and certainly you're not against someone having their own personal choice about how they identify themselves and how they feel about certain aspects of their life. So that's all clear, I think. But it is confusing. Bottom line, it is. So we'll see. Maybe in the future there'll be a way to unconfuse it a little bit.
Good luck.
So we'll be back with more Valley Talk right after a quick break.
Looking to save money on lighting fixtures, lamps, shades, special gifts, home and garden decor? Larry and Marge Tomlin, owners of J&J Electric, invite you to see the high quality and low prices at J&J Electric. J&J has been in the electrical business for over 50 years, so you know their products and knowledge are the best. Visit J&J's spectacular showroom. The hometown folks at J&J Electric appreciate your business. At your service for over 50 years. J&J Electric, South Pacific and 22nd in Albany.
Have you ever noticed that fast food all kind of tastes the same? When you want good-tasting Mexican food, drive by those drive-thrus and come to Taqueria Dos Arbolitos in Lebanon or Taqueria Alonso in Albany or Corvallis. They offer a large variety of authentic Mexican dishes all made with the freshest ingredients. Relax, sit down, and enjoy a real dining experience. Taqueria Dos Arbolitos in downtown Lebanon, Taqueria Alonso in downtown Albany, and Taqueria Alonso, Kings and Buchanan in Corvallis.
Lebanon shopping, it just makes sense.
Like to build your own burger? I mean, not any burger, but a big, juicy, half-pound burger with various cheeses, toppings, and more. Then head to Bigfoot Grill. Hi, this is Riley, and I want you to savor the quality you can taste in every bite of our gourmet burgers. In downtown Lebanon on South Main, Bigfoot Grill.
Need tires? Hi, this is Shane from Kanega Point S Tire and Auto. From lawnmowers to tractors, cars, trucks, and semis, we have your tire. And Kanega's ASE certified mechanics can help you with full auto repair. We even have propane for your barbecue and RV. Kanega Point S Tire and Auto, still at the Y in Lebanon.
Exclamation Point is your Lebanon Needlepoint shop for new ideas in Needlepoint. Tough to find at 775 and a half Milton Street, but worth it when you do. Visit shop-exclamationpoint.com for directions to the shop. And think, what will I learn new this year?
Lebanon shopping, it just makes sense.
If you own or manage a business, you know you need control of your transportation costs. PetroCard is more than just fuel, offering card lock, mobile fueling, unbranded and branded fueling programs, and lubricants. PetroCard is the largest independent franchise of Pacific Pride, owning over 65 convenient locations throughout Oregon and Washington. PetroCard has over 30 years' experience in the petroleum industry, providing detailed reporting, competitive prices, and reduced paperwork from one vehicle to a fleet of trucks. You'll save time, money, and be able to manage your fuel and lubricant costs more efficiently. With the automatic fueling systems from Pacific Pride, you get 24-hour access to gas and diesel at thousands of Pacific Pride locations throughout the U.S., some complete with showers. Get control of your transportation costs now. Call PetroCard at 1-800-4-FUEL. That's 1-800-367-3835. 1-800-367-3835. PetroCard. More than just fuel.
ABC House presents the Runaway Santa Fun Run and Walk on Sunday, December 1st. Your participation and contributions benefit ABC House, the Child Abuse Intervention Center serving Benton and Linn counties. There is something for the whole family with a 5K fun run walk, as well as a Rudolph Kids 1/2 mile walk. The run walk will take you on a tour of festive downtown Albany and ends by joining the Downtown Twice Around Christmas Parade. Participants receive a 5-piece Santa suit, holiday finisher medal, and a goodie bag. Find out about sponsorships and sign up your team or family for this fun event. Info at abchouse.org. That's abchouse.org. The Runaway Santa Run, hosted by We Run Oregon. Fitness, fun, and a great cause. Sunday, December 1st.
Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont, Sunday afternoons on News Talk 1580 KGAL.
Back to KGAL's Valley Talk. As we often do when Hossel Herring's our guest host each Tuesday, we talk about things that he's covered on his website, hh-today.com. This is on there, and so you can follow along if you'd like, hh-today.com. The city of Albany, through the Albany Revitalization Area, has hired Rick Williams Consulting, did this back in January, to study downtown parking and to make recommendations. And those recommendations and the study is complete, and so Hossel has some comments.
That's right. And the study found, I mean, the study was done in a very meticulous way. And Rick Williams is a one-man operation out of Portland. He has done parking studies for all kinds of cities in Oregon, big ones and little ones. And he goes about it in a very methodical way. First of all, he gathers data. And he hires people to walk around on certain days and count all the parking spaces, count how many cars are in them, or in the count, even check, keep track of their license plates to make sure that they don't get counted twice. And so he has, he developed some data for the Albany downtown parking situation. And the conclusion to that he reported in a draft that he talked about before, but now is in a little more formal draft, is that Albany parking spaces are used much less than at capacity, something like 30 or 40% most of the time. The translation of that is that the parking system is such that you can almost always find a parking space within walking distance of where you're going downtown. Now, that conclusion is not a surprise to anybody who has followed the situation over the years. Because from time to time, I mean, there are always complaints about parking in downtown Albany. That's because people are used to, people are used to parking someplace in a parking lot of a mall or, a big box store where there's always a bunch of extra spaces. So when they go downtown and they're supposed to park on the street, first of all, you got a parallel park, which is kind of uncomfortable for a lot of drivers these days. When you find a space and you got to hold up traffic in the lane behind you, and that's kind of uncomfortable. And then sometimes you can't find a space right in front of the door that you're trying to go to. So you have to go maybe around the corner and find a space there, or even find one of the stalls and the parking lots that the city has provided for, 40 or 50 years downtown. And so from time to time, the city of Albany has looked into whether or not there's much of a parking problem, has done something similar to what Rick Williams did, except not in a methodical way like he did. So they've checked, looked around and counted parking stalls that were empty at various parts of various times of the year or the day, that is. And they always concluded that, look, there's always parking somewhere. So we don't have a big problem. But for some reason, and I can't remember exactly why it was that CARA, that is the Central Albany Revitalization Area Advisory Board, decided to recommend that a formal parking study be conducted. But this board discussed that issue back in January and decided to go ahead and hire this fellow, Williams, to do the study. Part of it might have had to do with the notion that, or the fact that in the downtown plan, there are plans for a couple of parking garages, that is, parking structures. Maybe the idea was to see whether or not there could be some justification for a parking structure. Now, when Williams first met with the CARA board, he said he wasn't too convinced that the parking structures are a good idea for places like Albany because, first of all, the main reason is they're very expensive to build and they're very expensive to keep up. And that he didn't think that there would possibly be a demand for that sort of thing here. That was one of the reasons one of the members of the city council, Dick Olson, voted against hiring him to do the study, because Olson thought, well, this guy doesn't want a parking structure. Turns out that, in his draft report, Williams says he doesn't mention parking structures. He does refer to the idea that, or he does recommend that maybe the council ought to keep thinking about what it might take to provide parking in the future and prepare in some way for that indefinite time that might arrive someday. But at the moment, what he's saying is that, look, there are no urgent problems with parking downtown. The parking system is working pretty well. And among other things, he says that the enforcement that the city has contracted with to the Albany Downtown Association, that's working pretty well, too. He makes the comment there that the enforcement seems quite efficient. Although he thinks they ought to maybe update their technology somehow.
Right.
The current technology is based on Android systems, and I don't know why he thinks that's not a good idea or why it's outdated, but he thinks it ought to maybe update it sometime. He looked at, this consultant looked at on-street parking, and he looked at off-street parking. And he noted, of course, that most of the off-street parking in the downtown area is in private lots. One of his suggestions was that the city might want to explore whether or not arrangements could be made with the owners of some of these private lots to make use of those the available space there, if it becomes necessary to provide more space for parking downtown. And whether or not that is possible, who knows, but he's suggesting that might be explored. It was interesting to me that the story that I did on HH Today about this parking study. Oh, by the way, the reason I did the story is that the draft of Williams' recommendations was published as part of the agenda for the CARA meeting on Wednesday night, tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. And the CARA board, that is the Downtown Urban Renewal Board, set aside half an hour to discuss it. So that's why I wrote the story about it. But what was most interesting to me was the reaction that I got on the site to this innocuous story reporting that the parking study didn't find much in the way of a problem in downtown parking in Albany. I mentioned that when the city contracted for the study, that the top price was going to be like $43,000, something like that. And a bunch of people objected to, that money could have been better used some other place, because we already know that there's no parking problem downtown. And then it kind of deteriorated into a discussion of term limits, because people were complaining about how the city government keeps being dominated by people who want to spend money on useless projects like this, and why don't they get changed? And the reason they don't, that situation doesn't get changed is because we don't have term limits. Council members can serve as often as they, or as long as they keep getting reelected, and many of them, some of them have been there for 20 or more years and so forth. And it just seems way out of line with what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is the city wanted to find out in a professional way what parking issues there are, and if there are any, how could they be resolved?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy did what he promised he would do. He would study he studied the system, gather detailed data, and reached his conclusion based on that. Seems like that's a perfectly legitimate thing, and it was perfectly legitimate for the city to want to, put a cap on this perennial discussion, especially when it came time to decide whether or not to even pursue the idea of a parking garage downtown, because the plan, the downtown plan, still has a couple of projects in it. Now, chances are they're not going to be pursued. City Care is not going to want to spend the money to $3 or $4 million to build a parking garage and then be responsible for administering it and charging fees for using it and all that. Nobody would use it downtown. I can't imagine in the next 30 years anybody right. using the parking garage downtown. So that's out of the – but now we have at least a firm basis on which to make a decision that that's not going to be done. And, you know, in the meantime, of course, CARE has cast its vision in a different direction. Now they want to do redevelop the riverfront in a way that is probably going to cost a lot of money if you know, the projects go ahead. And the parking garage, chances are – out of the picture. One of the reasons I think that the CARE board wanted to deal with, wanted to have some firm information on the parking situation was that it has acquired the Wells Fargo building. The city has acquired the Wells Fargo, a former bank branch downtown, which has a pretty nice little parking lot. Mm-hmm. And the question was, what do you do with this parking lot? Do you make it a public lot? Or so forth, and now in the plans for redevelopment of this bank branch, that parking lot is going to figure, and the parking study is probably going to inform the decision that CARE is going to have to make on accepting the plan for redeveloping that property. That's a decision that's probably going to be made in the next few months, mm-hmm. and the parking study probably will be useful for that.
That's Hassel Herring. I'm Jeff McMahon. And as we roll on Valley Talk here today, again, referring to Hassel's website, hh-today.com, we're going to talk about climate process, the crisis that is apparently upon us with our climate and the things that the experts are recommending we do to either reverse or stave off the ultimate effects of a climate crisis. So Hassel had some thoughts. He wrote about them at his website, hh-today.
Yes, well, that's right. I did write
that. That was my lead-in, so there you are, my friend.
The study came out last week, and it was let me back up. There was some stories in the paper. And a press release from Oregon State reporting on the on a article or on a paper published in the opinion section of a magazine or of a journal, a scientific journal called Bioscience. And the article was by a couple of people in the Department of Forestry at Oregon State and some of their colleagues from universities around the world. And what it was a call to be aware of the climate emergency and that faces the world, or that the world faces, and the things that should be done to try to prevent it. Now, you know, this is not the first time that that sort of thing has been published, obviously, but it struck me as though this was a little more alarmist than usual, because I mean, it said we're facing an emergency. An emergency normally is the sort of thing you call 911 for, you know, or you take somebody to the emergency room, because it is a true, really imminent right now emergency. And it struck me that the recommendations that this article, this paper made went a little beyond what's reasonable to, I mean, it would be reasonable if we faced an actual emergency. But, you know, when you look around and you follow the news from around the world, the kinds of emergencies that actually exist have nothing to do with the climate, at least not in the way that can readily be seen. And you got various wars going on, you got religious conflicts all over the place. You got people being, you know, whole nations being, or whole populations being decimated by yeah. war. You got migration going on around the world with whole segments of populations, changing countries, trying to find or repopulating other parts of the world in a way, and changing that culture. All those kinds of things are going on. And in connection with that, you think that the climate is gradually changing, and it has been for a long time. It was going to keep going, and then maybe it's changing a little faster now that we're paying more attention to it. Maybe that's true. But to call it an emergency seems to me to be kind of an overreaching. And then to recommend a bunch of things that should be done to solve or prevent this emergency from becoming even worse. One of the things that they suggested is, population growth needs to be curtailed. Well, you know, we've been talking about this since the 1960s. I think somebody named Ehrlich talked about the population bomb back in the 1960s, and mm-hmm. we're going to be all doomed. And population has been growing. At the time, it was about 3 billion. Now it's, you know, more than 7 billion, sure, in the world. And but so far, I mean, we seem to be doing okay. And it turns out that in a lot of countries, the population growth has subsided. Much of the Western world, population is not being replenished at the rate that it would take to keep it stable. So immigration kind of takes care of that. You still have countries growing like the United States, even though our the rate of births is not really keeping us even. And in Western Europe, that's also true. And in the developing countries, parts of Africa, for example, the birth rate also has started declining. Now, the authors of this particular paper say that decline is slowing down, and they're worried about that. But you can look all over the place online, and you find that there are plenty of predictions that say that the world population is going to stabilize at a certain level, not going to grow beyond that. And you know that it can't keep growing anyway, because there are certain natural limits. If you can't make a living, you can't feed, you can't find food, for example, then you're not going to have more people. They're not going to, if they are born, they're going to die. So as sad as that is, I mean, there are some natural limits on the population growth. So that is one thing that you don't really have to worry too much about. They point out, I mean, the authors of this story point out that one of the things that helps with population is to make sure that women everywhere or young women everywhere have an opportunity for a full education, so that they, and because that has been shown that, you know, the more people, the better educated they are, the more chances they have in life, the fewer kids they eventually have. But that's already taken place. Turns out that the rate of education, even in the developing world, is much better than it was even 20 to 30 years ago. So that's something that's being taken care of. One of the other things that the authors of this climate emergency paper suggested was, you know, we ought to, one of the problems is that we eat a lot of meat. And you know, when you have ruminant livestock that produces a lot of methane gas, that's methane gas is one of the leading greenhouse gases, and so it's a problem, not just because of the greenhouse gas, but also because all this all the land that it takes to raise livestock could be used to grow food for people. Well, maybe that's true, although you'd think that. What they would suggest is that people ought to stop eating meat or not eat as much meat, and so they could eat more plant food, plant-based food, and so that is certainly a wise suggestion for all of us. Maybe we ought to eat at least less red meat, and if we ate more plant-based food, maybe we would have less of a weight problem than many, you know,
well,
people
that
do.
All sounds good, but how does that help to stop the climate
Well, the thing is, methane crisis. Would be reduced, and methane is one of the things that leads to global warming, supposedly. And so
fewer cows tooting. Is that what we're talking about?
That flatulence is what we're talking about.
Cow flatulence.
Cow methane. But they're worried about other things too. They're worried, for example, that the rate of air travel has greatly increased in the last generation or two.
Yeah.
So they want people to do less air travel, I guess. And the fundamental conclusion is that our problem with the climate emergency is largely tied to our wealthy lifestyle. So they want us all to be living in a more modest lifestyle. And I think from a individual standpoint, that certainly makes a lot of sense. All of us would be better off if we were a little more frugal and if we lived a little less ostentatiously. That would make sense. But what they're talking about is the implication of the paper, and papers like this, is that what we ought to do is impose certain controls on people to bring about these changes. And what it reminds me of is a little bit of life, of life in the old so-called German Democratic Republic, the GDR, where everybody was living a very, very modest lifestyle. And that the reason they did is the government told them so. It's a communist government, and they told them, look, you can't do this and you can't do that. We're going to tell you where to live and how to live and so forth. Well, if that's what we want, that's what, I mean, if that's what, if the implications are as I see them, then papers like this really point us in a bad way, it seems to me, because they point us to a totalitarian kind of existence where the busybodies in government, they will tell us all the good things that we should be doing. We shouldn't drive big cars. We shouldn't live in big houses. We shouldn't live in houses at all. We should be living in apartment blocks. And all of that would be economically more sensible because we'd be using less energy and we would be using certainly less fossil fuels and so forth. But it also means a total decline in individual liberty. I mean, at the moment, most of us can decide within our means, obviously, where we want to live, how we want to drive, where we want to go, where we want to go on vacation, what we want to eat, and how often we want to eat, and so forth. All of that is part of our individual, lifestyles. And the government, even though in many ways they try by doing things like banning plastic bags, for example, or even plastic straws in some cases. I mean, they try to tell us how to live in a lot of ways, but not in a fundamental way. And so when scientists like these people, the people who wrote this paper, recommend a bunch of drastic steps to try to reduce the human impact by reducing the wealthy lifestyle, then what they're talking about is uniformity of, everybody being equal at a lower level and nobody getting out of line and so forth. And it seems to me that we've tried those kinds of systems, and they lead to a lot of human misery. And people who want freedom usually try to overthrow them eventually. And for a while there, we were doing okay. At the moment, though, we seem to be slipping backwards into where that kind of government control of people's lives is more and more accepted. And papers like this play into that into that theme.
Yep, I think you're exactly right. Well, just for about a minute, we got about a minute and a half we can chat. What's up with turkeys running around loose in West Albany? Hokey
well,
smokes.
The turkeys, I mean, it is no big deal, obviously, but in Lebanon, for example, turkeys have been part of the landscape for a long time, as I understand it, from just reading stories.
Yeah, well, we see them
it.
Out here. I'll see them on occasion.
But lately,
driving to
for
and from
the last
work,
year so. Or so, especially in West Albany, where often I ride my bike, I often run across this flock of turkeys.
Yeah.
And they have become kind of an attraction of the of the place. Not long ago, somebody was on Facebook saying that they had company coming from out of town or somewhere, and the girl in the company said, "Hey, where are the turkeys? Can we go see the turkeys?" Well, and I guess maybe they weren't around at that particular time, but
right. You
see them now quite often, it seems, to at least I see them. And the first time, there was maybe half a dozen or maybe a few more. And the last time I checked, I think there were, I saw the same flock, I think. Now there were 16 or 17. I thought that they are multiplying somehow or attracting newcomers, I guess. And then yesterday I went down another road in West Albany, and there was a bunch of different ones, a little more grown up. These were male turkeys, I think.
Yep.
They had, they looked like male turkeys anyway.
Yes.
And
they had the accessories.
And so they seem to be getting acclimated to that place. And I don't know why.
People
exactly.
Don't seem to bother them too much either.
No. It's and they're quite used to people. You can walk up to them and they just kind of scatter. I mean, they don't fly away. They can't fly anyway. But can they fly? No, I don't think
not
so.
Not very well.
So they get out of your way, but they're not in any particular hurry to get out of your way.
Yeah. They're sort of laissez-faire.
So it's kind of an added attraction to parts of Albany.
Yep. Well, so I'm on the lookout for him. We're living in West Albany temporarily right now, so I've been keeping my eyes peeled. I haven't seen him yet, but
well,
I'm sure I will.
You will. Just walk around there a little bit.
Yep. That's Hasso Herring. I'm Jeff McMahon. Thanks for joining us on Valley Talk today. Hasso will join us next Tuesday. In the meantime, check out his website, hh-today.com. And feel free to comment after his articles. You're very welcome to. A lot of people do, and the back and forth gets to be a lot of fun. See you next Tuesday.
See you then.
Willamette Living Magazine brings you the best of our special area in print and online. Locally owned and operated, Willamette Living is the lifestyle magazine of Oregon's Willamette Valley from Eugene to Portland. Every other month brings a new edition packed with engaging local stories, beautiful photography, and offerings from our neighbors in business. Visit WillametteLiving.com to read the current issue online, find out about advertising your business, or subscribe now and have every issue delivered to your home or office. Willamette Living Magazine, your guide to the best of the Willamette Valley.
Yard work. Some people love it, most people hate it. Everyone loves working with Gonzalez Yard Care, the best personalized yard care, plus new sod or seed lawns, fencing, pavers and flagstones, retaining walls, and it's all surprisingly affordable. With Gonzalez Yard Care, you get what the big guys offer and a lot more. Call today for a free estimate. Gonzalez Yard Care, 926-1412. That's 926-1412.
It's all happening in downtown Albany.
In historic downtown Albany, the Albany Regional Museum at the corner of 2nd and Lyon Streets features changing exhibits, brown bag lunchtime lectures, and other special events. Visit the Albany Regional Museum, where our community's past comes to new life.
This is Andrea with AK Carpet & More. If you're thinking of updating your home, rental unit, or business, I personally invite you into AK Carpet & More. We take pride in exceeding your expectations. AK Carpet & More at 140 First Avenue in downtown Albany or call 541-928-0755.
Health and Herbs, your complete health and herbs source, offering all natural health alternatives. Log on to betterhealthherbs.com or call 541-791-8400. Health and Herbs, your complete health and herbs source for practitioners, stores, and individuals. Health and Herbs, across from the courthouse at 425 Ellsworth Street, Southwest, downtown Albany.
It's all happening in downtown Albany.
Locally owned and operated, this is the very independent News Talk 1580.